I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I say to you today, my friend, let freedom ring. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Indeed, it is a time for wisdom. For yet again, the family of a young black man is grieving a life cut short. Yet again, the streets of an American city are marred by violence, by shattered glass and shouts of anger and shows of force. Yet again, a community is reeling, its fault lines laid bare, and its bonds of trust and respect frayed. Yet again, brave police officers have been attacked in the line of duty. What we have seen in Baltimore should, indeed, I think does, tear at our soul. From Ferguson to Staten Island to Baltimore, the patterns have become unmistakable and undeniable. Walter Scott, shot in the back in Charleston, South Carolina, unarmed, in debt, terrified of spending more time in jail for child support payments he couldn't afford. Tamir Rice, shot in a park in Cleveland, Ohio, unarmed and just 12 years old. Eric Garner, choked to death after being stopped for selling cigarettes on the streets of our city. And now, Freddie Gray, his spine nearly severed while in police custody. Not only as a mother and a grandmother, but as a citizen, a human being, my heart breaks for these young men and their families. We have to come to terms with some hard truths about race and justice in America.
Welcome tonight, America. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you joining us tonight. This is AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. And tonight, we take a very clear look into the condition of America, racism in America. As we reflect on Black History Month, we take a look at where we are as a people and a nation dealing with racism and racial overtones and racial divide. We take a trip into history and to current day issues that challenge America and Black America at that. Folks, hang on to your seats. AJC Radio takes off right now. And there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, again, welcome to AJC Radio, and we appreciate you joining us tonight. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and William Williams, and the entire AJC Radio team, as we get ready for another conversation dealing with something, folks, that is really, really important, that we take a look at the condition of America right now, racism in America. Where are we? What challenges do we face, given the violence and the things that have happened as alluded to by Secretary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, speaking to those issues, and her last statement she made is that it is time that we take a look at the condition of America. William, when you hear things like that, and you hear the Secretary speaking to it, presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, addressing these issues that face Black America, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's something that has been, it's been there. It's been there all along. I think more and more since we've had an African-American president, it's become more in the spotlight. And people are realizing that it's a very serious problem. But it's existed for a long time. So I think now it's gone to the national stage and people are looking at it.
Well, absolutely. Lisa, when you we are in a time and an era, if you will, in America where, as I shared before, the young lady on the airplane that we were taking to D.C., one of our trips, said to me, "I have lost sight and I cannot distinguish whether it's 1960 or 2015 or 14 at that time." Lisa, how concerning should we be at this point, the condition of America right now on this racial divide?
Well, I think it's very concerning because of the simple fact that we are a country that is very diverse. We have people from everywhere. We need to be able to have a society that accepts people for who they are, for how they were born, and their national origin, whatever race or ethnicity they may be. It shouldn't be an issue. I think it always will be, but I think it's a sad thing that we live in a country that's supposedly as it evolved as the United States of America, and it's hard to tell the difference because times are not changing as they should be.
Absolutely. Cliff, your thoughts on that?
Well, it just proves that, you know, everything that we've seen in the media, every time you look up and you see, you know, something that's happened against the Black community with law enforcement. And the thing that continues to shock me is the fact that we cannot get an indictment. It's like they keep going one step further to try to appease the conscience of the Black community. Say, okay, well, we arrested an officer, or we called a grand jury to investigate. But in case after case, there's either no indictment, and the one, I forget whose case it was, but the grand jury didn't even vote. How does that even happen? You bring something up to the grand jury, and they don't even vote on the fact of whether this person possibly committed a crime or not.
That was a Tamir Rice case.
Yeah, and so it shows, it's like, okay, we need, something needs to happen, something needs to be done, and I'm glad that, Ms. Clinton or Mrs. Clinton is speaking to it and dealing with the fact that something else needs to happen. It needs to go farther.
No, absolutely. And folks, you want to join into the conversation tonight, it is going to be interesting. Pick up the phone, 347-838-8976. That's 347-838-8976. We'd like to hear from you out there across America and around the world as we continue to deal with these issues in regards to racism. These are things that are very real. Lisa, and before we go further, Lisa, the disclaimer.
Yes, we'd like to remind everyone that we are not attorneys and that a just cause does not provide legal advice. Please contact your own personal legal advisor for all of your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of a just cause or AJC Radio. And as always, we want to thank you for tuning in and choosing to spend a little of your evening with us.
And we appreciate that. And we're excited again about you joining us. And I'll tell you what, Lisa, we got some information at change.org. We're going to ask you folks to go out to change.org and sign the petition for the IRP6. Another call's going on out there is Renee Lima Marin, the gentleman that was sent back to prison for 98 years after doing 15 years in prison. And I'll tell you what, we're trying to fight for his justice as well. Please go out there and sign those petitions. Also, the Tim Wright petition. We'll be talking about that a little bit more. A gentleman framed by police officers, our friend from Australia, Danielle, has reached out that we give that message out there, that folks go out there and sign. Folks, you could be signing petitions. Keep your pen and your ink ready, because of your keyboard ready in this case, and go out there and sign for these folks. There's a lot of injustice going on in this country, and we have to come together and get it done. But right now, what we're going to do, there's some things happening, Lisa, at change.org. Folks are making comments. Folks are fighting for the RP6, and I want to tell you why they're fighting. Let's go there to the clip now.
Some people think that business is a game. And what we have learned is that business actually is war.
When they wanted people to sign non-disclosure agreements and all that kind of stuff, sometimes they didn't want to do it.
It's strange to me. I think it's still strange. It just absolutely makes no sense. Is this really real? Is this happening?
And then all of a sudden your whole life is ripped apart.
What we have learned is that the RP6 story was supposed to be the American dream is an American nightmare.
They were floored that they were even being raided.
It became very clear that the court-appointed attorneys were not working for the guys. And it seemed like in many cases that they were collaborating or working with the prosecution.
We constantly hear in the news, every week you're going to hear about another person wrongfully convicted. And this is a unique case in the sense that you have six businessmen that have been wrongfully convicted. You would think the media would jump all over it.
Justice is not fair anymore. They say justice is supposed to be blind. It's not blind. It's not blind. They pick and choose who they want to convict and who they want to send to jail.
Is this happening in America? The American dream of the RP6 has turned into a nightmare. Crying children left behind as a result of a corrupt system and corruption. We will seek and search for justice. We will ask the tough questions. We will demand answers as justice lays idle in the streets of America. We look for the answer. Ladies and gentlemen, go out to change.org, sign the petition now. America's future depends on it. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the IRP spec. And every show on this program is dedicated to the RP6. And the reason we wanted you to hear that, folks, of America, this is why folks are fighting for justice. Who are the RP6? Are they some fairy tale made up people? Well, we got news for you. They're real people, real families, real pain, real situations. Who are they? We dedicate this show to them tonight. David Banks, Gary Walker, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, and Demetrius Harper. And we continue to seek for justice for these men. And Lisa, we were talking today about all of the comments at change.org that people are saying, people are speaking, people are making some real statements, if you will.
Yes, they
Lisa,
are.
Did you have a couple you wanted to share with America tonight?
I sure did, Mont. There's one I really like. It says, America, shame on you. You are not the land of hope and glory, but shame. These men tried protecting American citizens, and this is how they're treated? The rest of the world watches on in disgust. Who are these good men now? And that's from a lady in Melbourne, Australia.
That's our friend Danielle.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's a real strong supporter of the RP6. Go here. Brian Abel in Rainer, Oregon, states the evidence has been gathered. The real crime is to not act on it. Another statement was made that they are. This comes from Loretta Perosi from Seattle, Washington. Says that these men were technicians who worked hard to produce a sorely needed product. As a techie myself, I am appalled by the persecution and prosecution of intelligent people by those who obviously are clueless about how technology can be used to solve big problems. No wonder we are losing the war on terror. We are more afraid of ourselves than anything else. Go find a guy waving a gun, put him in jail. Oh, wait. Most gun owners are white. Silly me. That comes from Loretta Perosi in Seattle, Washington. But being a part of the tech world, she understands and has read up on the RP6. William, you have any for the people?
Well, the one that got me was here is Michael McCray from Pine Bluff, Arkansas. He said this is a terrible injustice, blatant hypocrisy. that everyone should rally to support the IRP6. I mean, simple and plain.
Oh, absolutely. Cliff, did you have any you wanted to share with the people tonight? I mean, it's just so many, and these are just a few of the ones that we were able to pull up and to share with you folks tonight. The purpose of this, Cliff, right, I'll go right to you, is that to let you know this is not a isolated local area issue. Injustice anywhere affects justice everywhere. The words of Dr. Martin Luther King, this is very clear. People are outraged. They know what's going on, and we continue to plead with our listeners. Go to change.org, sign the petition for the IRP6. It'll make a big difference. Cliff?
Yes, one that stood out to me said, this is just one case of the police sweeping wrong under the carpet for their own personal gains at others' expense, while people who have done more heinous crimes are given slaps on the wrist. Right is right, wrong is wrong. Why should these men continue to be punished for the sake of secrecy and taken away from their families without due process? And that's written by Bonita in Maywood, Illinois.
Oh, very, very good. And to all our listeners out there across America, we thank you so very much for getting involved with this issue, signing the petition, fighting for justice for these men. Again, the IRP6, they are David Bank, Gary Walker, Kentwood Barnes, Dave Zerpolo, Clinton Stewart, and Demetrius Harper. We will continue to bring these comments to you and to our listening audience out there. Go out there, tell your friends, your family, your congressman, every person that you can talk to. Tell them to go to change.org. The IRP6 story is clear. There's a video out there. You can click that on. That's some of that is what you heard tonight. But this is critical information that we fight for justice as we continue to every single day here at AJC Radio and the Just Cause Organization. William, you had something?
Yes, I just going through even more. And what's so amazing is, you know, everybody from around the country is basically chiming in to support the IRP6. This one right here says, I signed this because the system has a lot of corruption, mainly against minorities. Also, intelligent minorities that can, I think this is actually wrong, disrupt the evil system. We will unite and put a stop to an evil in the system. And this is from Andrew Finch in Longview, Texas.
And one other one, Lamont, that really speaks to, I mean, these aren't just people who are going out here and say, okay, well, I just signed a petition because somebody asked to sign a petition. Here, C.J. Ford in Anaheim, California says, this is one of those sad situations where the legal process fails. Anyone that signs this petition should also research this case, and you will see that these guys were railroading. So, I mean, people are going out there checking on the facts themselves and realizing that this is a case that needs to be dealt with, and that's why they're signing the petition.
Oh, absolutely. And, folks, again, thank you for that. And one more. Folks, this story, as we said, the lady, our friend Danielle from Australia, we also have from Sharon Mountain from Tamaruni, New Zealand. Right, it's wrong to imprison innocent people. Justice needs to be done ASAP for all innocent prisoners. These are things, this story is not only crossing across the United States, it is crossing the waters and going into the, you know, thank God for the World Wide Web. People are listening, people are concerned. Lisa, your comment from Danielle said, shame on America. Right. These are people in other countries saying we have a problem. So this is something we got to look at. Folks, hang on to your seats. We visit our topic tonight here at AJC Radio, racism in America. Where is Black America today? You know, as in relation to where we've come from. Are we any further along than we were? And what challenges lie ahead for this great nation? We're going to talk about it here in moments. Folks, hang on to your seats. Grab some cappuccino, some chocolate, hot chocolate at that. Settle in as we get ready for another journey on AJC Radio. We're coming right back. Ladies and gentlemen, can I ask you a question? Did you know that there are over 2.4 million people behind bars in the United States? I'll ask you one more question. Were you aware that that is the highest number of people behind bars in the entire world?
The United States makes up of only 5% of the world's population, but we have over 25% of the world's prison population. America prides itself on being the most advanced and progressive nation on earth. However, sadly, we are also the world's most archaic. I'm going to give you a personal invitation to get involved with the fight against mass incarceration. Take a few moments to call 1-855-529-4252. That is a just cause. And we fight for justice. Again, call a just cause today. Don't delay. Call 1-855-529-4252. It is time, and I say high time, that we take America's incarceration seriously. Won't you join us? Call today.
Hi, I'm an actor, and that qualifies me to talk to you about social issues. And even though my opinion is controversial, I believe that racism is wrong. Now today, what I would like you to do is take a look at your skin color and hug somebody that has a different color skin. We can stop racism together, one hug at a time. Definitely ask permission before you hug somebody. Thank you.
With one call, you don't have to be a victim anymore.
These fights are getting worse. I don't know what to do.
With one call, you can end the cycle of violence.
We're glad you called. The first thing we want to do is to ensure your safety.
With one call, you can change everything. To speak to a domestic abuse victim advocate, contact your local family advocacy program.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and William Williams are here on AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. And tonight we visit a very serious topic. It is Black History Month in America and the United States. And America faces challenges that are huge right now. Where is Black America today? We see and hear stories on a consistent basis of African-American men being shot down by police officers. And let me make this point very clear. We are not addressing all police officers. We are not addressing all sheriff's departments, but we are addressing a global issue of racism in this country and racial divide. There is a breakdown in communities with law enforcement. We address those issues tonight as we take a look at where is America? How far have we come? What challenges lie ahead? And I think, Lisa, Cliff, William, a lot of folks think because President Barack Obama was voted in as the president, the first African-American president of the United States, that our challenges are not real. That is exactly 100% not true. We have seen racism and hate grow even larger as a result of an African-American president being in office. We see divide in our congressional system where the president is fought on issue after issue, and we can make it nice and make it look nice as say what we want to say, but race has something to do with it. And I think William, that's something that we have to take a look at, that America, when we were in a position in the 1960s, the civil rights movement, being chased by dogs, sprayed down with hoses, all the things that contribute to our issues in this country. There's one very critical point that's happening here. A lot of celebrities in Hollywood, a lot of folks that have a platform to speak out against these issues, refuse to do so. William, your thoughts on that, and how do we get America and those people that have an existing platform to speak?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's something that needs to happen. People need to use the platform in which they have to address the critical issues of the country. The bottom line is we have an African-American president. He represents the people that voted for him. So the masses basically said, listen, we feel a man of color can represent us well in the White House. But now, because of that, elements are out there just saying, you know what? They're very, very racial, very, very racist in what they're saying, in their views. They're basically coming out there. Even one of the senators, I think it was, and I don't want to say that, but anyway, you're just saying that Congress as a whole, they're dealing with these issues. Our society as a whole is dealing with these issues. And people that are out there, actors and actresses that have a platform, need to go ahead and use that platform to deal with the reality and not be worried about the ramifications of them may not be working in, you know, an actor again or have another production or be in another role.
No, absolutely. And you know what? I think America sometimes may lose sight on the issue that there are a lot of people that there's been casualties to this battle of racism in this country. People have died as a result of racism and the things that we face. We doesn't take us long to go to Eric Garner in New York City, choked to death with his hands up, stating no resistance to the police. This gives you an indication where America is right now. And if you look at the video of Eric Garner and you see the police officer with his knee on his neck, and he's telling the police officers, I cannot breathe, I can't breathe. And you continue to crush this man for selling cigarettes on a corner.
The man died on camera.
He died on camera.
He died. Yeah. He died on camera. How much more evidence do you need of a man's death while standing there saying, I cannot breathe? He was unarmed, arms in the air, police officers around him. He said, I cannot breathe. The brutality was there. The cruelty was there towards a man that was of color. And then these guys get off. That's what really makes it really frustrating.
Absolutely.
Because you see this. You see the video evidence. You needed no more than just to look at the video and say, these guys committed a crime against this man. And why?
And I'll tell you what, William, we're going to dig into that. Folks, this is some serious conversation that we're going to have tonight in regards to these issues. And it's something that we have to take a very, very clear look in the mirror and say, you know what? We have to change. As we face an election year and America stands at a crossroad, as I say oftentimes, of decision. Who we vote in that White House is critical. Who we vote into the seats that will come open in Congress are critical. That changes may begin to be implemented. It is something, and it is a topic that Congress is looking at, and even down the criminal justice reform. We're going to get into all of that, folks. Hang on to your seat. History will be made tonight. Take notes, because I'll tell you, this is valuable information. And right now, we're going to get ready to bring on Vimal Cephas. He is a performing artist. Actually performed in a case that we're looking at racism in America. We believe that was involved racial targeting with the IRP6. But that's my opinion on the situation. These men were targeted, and he actually played one of the IRP6 in a play. And I'm going to let him tell it, and we're going to get ready to bring him on. And he is doing some great things, and he is involved with a lot of these things that are going on. Right now, we're going to bring in Vimal. Vimal, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How about yourself, Lamont?
Doing well. So good to have you, and I've been really thrilled and honored to talk to you on the conversations that we've had. And Vimal, I'm going to give you the floor, man. As we talk about racial divide and issues in America, we want to talk about, I know you was able to play Kendrick Barnes in the IRP6 production, in regards to the injustice and the racial issues that faced that they were approached with and had to deal with. I want you to share with America your thoughts on that. What motivated you to play that part, and what impact did it have on you, Jamel?
Initially, I really wasn't even interested in the role because of the title of it. A lot of times when you're presented with scripts and different artistic pieces, a lot of times the roles are very stereotypical. They want you to fill the role of the stereotypical angry black man. And sure. At that point, I was very burnt out on doing that, so I almost threw the script out without even looking at it. But digging into it and realizing what was going on, that these men were in jail presently and did not really receive a fair trial. And again, beyond that they were doing something for the overall well-being and safety of this nation, and that they were, what they had done, everything that they had done was essentially stolen from them, and then they were locked away, was mind-blowing to me. And beyond that, being in the IT career field as well myself, it really struck home, because that could be something that happened to me directly. I mean, in reality, right now, I'm waiting to begin a position in a couple of months. This company is essentially doing the same thing that the IRP6 did, where they were negotiating contracts and bringing in workers to work for a projected contract, given on right. on the contingency that they had settled the deal with the customer, whoever it may be. So to know that that's a common practice, something that regularly happens with every business, and especially within IT, and that they were locked away for it, and then everything that they did was taken, and nobody really knows what happened to it. So many different factors, and key witnesses being disallowed to testify. It's a really interesting case.
No, absolutely. And Jamel, a question for you. We find that a lot of folks in, whether it's Hollywood, plays, movies, television, the people that have a platform to address the racial tensions in America right now seem to go silent, seem to go missing. How important is it that African Americans in Hollywood and everywhere begin to maybe embrace some of these roles to educate America on the racial issues that plague us today?
It's extremely important, and I think, I hate to be a bandwagon type of person, but what Beyonce recently did was the perfect example. And, even with artists like Kendrick Lamar, I believe people are starting, African-American artists are really starting to feel the need to not be silent anymore. It's like you can't. It's going to harm you because it's in our backyard. It's affecting each of us, and even beyond our race, it's not good for any of us.
No, absolutely.
I won't even get into that. But the creation of race and all of that, I'm sure you already. I'll step back on that.
No, though, that's fine. And Jamel, I think that's a good point. I think it's amazing that Beyonce comes under the fire because she is making a statement in a song. And she's showing in that video, they had clips of it today, where the cops are really harassing these African Americans and doing what they're doing. There seems to be a distaste in the mouth of America for truth. And for raw truth at that, it is, you hear that all the time, you'll type in at the end of the year, what is the most popular saying in America over the last year? One statement was, it is what it is. And that is what it is. Mm. It is clear. And until we look at it in the mirror, face on, we're never going to deal with it. And I think, Cliff, you had something to add to that.
Yeah, of a male, just by happenstance, I was Ken Barnes, I would say his college roommate. So I grew up with him in high school and through college, and we've worked actually on a couple IT jobs together. But what I wanted to ask you, you know, once Judge Sarikin got into this play with you guys, and to understand, to get into the prospect of what the judge did in this case, and to realize that, okay, you know, sure, this is something made for seemingly for the big screen or the stage, but to know that, you know, not only the prosecutor and the people who came after them, you know, in the IT field that were competitors, but to have the prospect of a federal judge not allowing witnesses, not allowing evidence, forcing a defendant to testify, what does that, I mean, can you just give us your thoughts?
And then not admitting that you forced them to testify.
and hiding the transcript, saying, I said something, what it was, I don't know, but guess what? It's not on the record. And then every part of the case after that just adds to the fact that, yes, something is hidden here, something is missing. What were your thoughts with that as you really got into the background and heard what Judge Sarikin, as a retired judge, was saying about this, that these are the facts, and he wanted you guys to represent that on stage?
Well, I just felt that it was definitely motivated by them being black men, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind. You know, and even within myself, I generally don't want to admit that or look to that being the first thing, because I think that can become a crutch,
right?
If you let it, and a lot of times blur your vision and understanding what the reality of what's going on around you. But in this case, I can't see any other reason outside of that. And that when the judge sat down, those were his words exactly as well. And when he was just chatting with us about reviewing the case, it all seemed rather peculiar when it came to him. And you just started digging a little bit at a time. And everything that they were doing was legit. It was common practice. So what else could there be, aside from them just being a threat in business? And I mean, I still don't know that that's a common business practice for you to get put away just to eliminate the competition.
Sure. And I think you make a good point. These men were doing something, and the reason we're addressing this issue tonight, this racism destroys every part of society that you can think of. These men set out with the entrepreneur spirit of America to keep the homeland safe, to address issues, the Twin Towers going down. This speaks to the point of how deep racism really goes and the collateral damage of racism. You have six men right now sitting in prison, five black, one Italian American, and a gentleman said to me, well, Lamont, if he's with blacks, he's black. Martin Luther King, when he marched, the white folks were treated worse. They were sprayed down and treated bad. You know why? Because they associated themselves with African American. This Italian American falls under the same guideline. And what you have here, how do we as a nation allow such divisive racism, things that cut to the core and destroyed families? You took men from their children, from their wives. This is the cost of racism. And nobody wants to speak about the pink elephant in the room. It is in the room. It's in the bathroom. It's in the kitchen. It is everywhere. And these are things that we have to address. But Mel, next question for you. And I know we had talked about your time, so I'm going to respect your time. What else are you doing in regards to dealing with Black History Month as an actor, as someone who is involved that does have a platform? Are there other avenues that you're doing to bring awareness to America and to that area in which you work to educate the American people of what's out there? What other things are you doing in regards to that?
Well, myself, I've been, this year has been a huge transformation for me. I haven't really taken too much of a voice in any of these issues until now, especially with my recent exposure to the things that are going on in the prison industrial complex. So I use every means that I have, email, Twitter, all of my social profiles. Anyone that follows me is aware of the IRP6 case. And the immigration detention centers. I've also did a play that dealt with what's going on in that arena, and I've recently been working with a local project called Playwrights Project, where we go into the prison and help the prisoners with getting their voice heard. They write their stories, they tell their stories, and we make opportunity for those plays to be performed within the local public, so that people are aware of what's going on.
Okay. Well, Mel, we salute you for what you're doing here on AJC Radio. Anything that we can do to promote what you're doing, we will continue to do that. How can folks get a hold of you if they'd like to reach you?
You can always find me on Facebook, just V-I-M-E-L, or Twitter. I go on by Groove Central SD, Vimel Cephas, V-I-M-E-L-S-E-P-H-U-S.
Okay, and I'll tell you what, Vimel, we appreciate you taking time tonight as we address this very important issue, and I think what you're doing is respectable, and we admire you for the work and what you've done in regards to the IRP6. We appreciate you letting everybody know that follows you about the IRP6. Feel free to direct them to us. If there's anything that AJC Radio and the Just Cause can do to promote what you are doing, we are workers together to bring justice to the United States and around the world. And we really, really appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know you have to be swamped and busy. We apologize for the horrible weather you may be experiencing in San Diego, California.
Tonight, but, yeah, all that sunshine. I don't know, man. It's tough out here.
Yeah, but Mel, stay in touch with me and our team here, and anything again we can do to help. You have a friend and an aide in AJC Radio and the Just Cause.
All right, thanks, Lamont, and it's been a pleasure. Please let me know anything further that I can do.
We definitely will. Thanks, and have a great evening, and enjoy your rest of the day.
All right, thanks. You do the same.
All right, thank you so very, very much, and folks, there you have it, Mel. A gentleman out there doing some things and took it upon himself with the IRP6 to get involved. We talked earlier about the price of racism. Cliff, when you hear him talk, he said he initially wasn't going to do it because of the stereotype involved with the fact. And he said he didn't want to use the race card, so to speak, but he was forced to based upon the facts. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it just continues to show that as anyone digs into this case, they find out that something went terribly wrong. When you look at, Vimel saying when he sat down with the judge, Judge Sarikin, and he started to talk to him about this, that Judge Sarikin came up with the same conclusion that the reason this happened to these men is because they were black executives that were competing with large white American companies.
That's right.
And that is the reason that all this came about, and like you say, Lamont, it is the fallout and the just everything that happens with racism. It's not just okay, you get called a racial slur or you don't get a job because you're a certain race, color, or creed. But you look at the fact that these men have been spending nearly 4 years in federal prison. One reason that it all boils down to, and this is not just me saying this, it boils down to the fact that they're black executives. And for a retired federal judge who knows the law, practices
and
the law,
who is white.
And who is white,
yeah,
said the reason this happened to these men is because of the color of their skin. And his playwright that Judge Sarikin wrote is called The Race Card Face Up. It's time to deal with.
Wow. Well, folks, there you have it. We're coming right back. And listen, The RP6 story of racism in this country is a very small part, but a huge impact on the lives and the family and the children of the RP6. When do we say it is enough? Racism cannot be tolerated. We're coming right back. I'm Lamont Banks along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, William Williams, as we continue to dig into Black History Month, racism in America, and what are the challenges that lie ahead for Black America. We're coming right back, folks. Stay with us.
Do you know anyone who's been sent to prison who's innocent? The United States is experiencing record numbers of exonerations in cases where people were wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit. If you believe that no one should be sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, there is something that you can do today. By remembering a just cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call a just cause at 855-529-4252. Or visit a-justcause.com and click the donate button. A Just Cause is a 501c3. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Let's be the voice of those who can't speak from behind the wall.
The uproar over the events and their fallout in Charleston has led President Obama to talk about race in the most blunt language the American public has ever heard from him. In doing so, he used a controversial word, one steeped in a legacy of hate, to make his point. NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker has that part of the story.
The massacre in South Carolina shocked a nation and jolted the first African-American president to speak with unprecedented candor about racial tensions and gun violence.
Racism, we are not cured of.
In an interview with podcast host Mark Maron, a frustrated President Obama used the N-word publicly for the first time as president. Out of sensitivity, NBC News has decided to bleep out the word.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say nigger in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt discrimination. We have to, societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior.
The reaction raw from South Carolina today.
He wasn't trying to sugarcoat anything.
I think everything he said was spot on.
I really thought we had progressed beyond that.
At historically black Howard University, callers took to the airwaves.
What has to change is the hearts and minds of the people.
So true.
He shocked us into an awareness, and I think it was so effective as a person who is the president of the United States of America trying to lead us and guide us through these treacherous waters of race in our own time.
In 2008, Mr. Obama rode a wave of hope and change into office, but statistics show for African Americans, significant problems remain. The unemployment rate among blacks has dropped, but at more than 10%, it's still double the unemployment rate for whites. Blacks are incarcerated nearly six times the rate of whites. And while hate crimes have declined, more than two-thirds are directed at African Americans. Dylan Roof's actions in South Carolina also renewed the president's call on guns.
I don't foresee any real action being taken until the American public feels a sufficient sense of urgency, and they say to themselves, this is not normal.
As emotions run high over these issues, the president is acutely aware his window for action is quickly closing.
And there you have it, folks. That particular clip, President Obama speaks bluntly on racism and the issues that face America. He went on the radio show. He spoke the language that people understand. And that's the N-word being used on a consistent basis. And the racial slurs that are being done to African-American communities in this country. The president, and as the news report stated, the president is aware that the window for change as he exits the White House is a very, very small window. What do we have to do, Cliff, going forward as we continue to try to echo the president's message that this is a real issue, this is a real problem, and it must be addressed? And I think the president is taking some steps to deal with that.
Yeah, and the first thing that has to be done is exactly what the president has done, is to expose what's going on. I mean, you got to put the issue on the table. Everybody in America knows that there's still racism in America. But if we don't address it, if we don't deal with it, if we don't put it on the table, if we don't bring it to light and say, hey, this is an issue we have to deal with, then it becomes, you know, the giant elephant in the room that everybody knows is there, but nobody wants to deal with. So President Obama has said, hey, we need to set this on the table. We need to look at it, as ugly as it is, and we need to start to dissect it and deal with it. I mean, it is an issue that has to be dealt with. We cannot just keep pushing it in the background. I mean, from everything, like he said, from, you know, just racial slurs in public, all the way to the fact that racism has come into the courtroom and you have judges sentencing people for the color of their skin. That is an issue that has to be dealt with. Otherwise, it's just a continual trend. Sure. I mean, we're in 2016, and you still see trials where judges are sentencing people the way that they want to for the color of their skin. You still see that people are being prosecuted because of the color of their skin. You still see law enforcement attacking black men and not being held accountable for it. When you can kill a man in public on film, namely Eric Garner, and the whole world sees it, and even the coroner says this is a homicide. The coroner said this was not an accidental death. This was not, you know, something else. This is homicide. You killed this man. It's basically murder, and no charges were brought forth. Tamir Rice, same issue. How do you shoot a 12-year-old kid? This kid is unarmed. He's got a play gun, and you jump out of your car as a police officer and begin to shoot him, and no charges are brought against you. Those are the type of things that have to be put on the table. This is because of racism, yes. And it needs to be dealt with. Otherwise, it's just going to continue.
And I'll share this. And we have a very talented young lady that's going to be joining us in here momentarily. Tammy Donnelly is going to be joining us. But listen to this, an article that was written by Harry Ziad. He writes this, that racism, the story goes, has gone from something kept in the dark margins of society and generally frowned upon to something regularly shouted from rooftops with pride. But racial disparities have existed in the healthcare, education, poverty rates, and on almost every other structural level for as long as this country has existed. Since when is saying something racist more of a problem than maintaining racist structures? It's a climate only shockingly ugly. If it puts words to shockingly ugly realities that are already here. A recent CNN article explores the newly erupted white frustration with non-white ethnic groups, particularly black and immigrant communities, through a series of interviews regarding Barack Obama, for instance. The article states many Trump supporters say he can't be trusted. He cares more about the welfare of black people than white, and he's inflamed racial divisions in this country. Others say they're convinced that he's Muslim. This is the problem.
They're insane.
When they're faced with truth, they want to defer or deflect. That's not going to get us anywhere as a country. How can you? They never want to just look in the mirror and say, look, we have a problem, but we want to blame other folks in regards to that. Right now, we're going to have an opportunity, and we're going to get back to that subject, William and Cliff and Lisa, but let me take a moment. We're going to try to bring on, Tammy Donnelly, was done, and I had an opportunity to speak with her. She deals with a lot of racial issues, disparities, things that face this country, and we want to bring her on right now. Tammy, are you with us?
Yes, hi, I'm here.
Thank you so very much for joining us tonight, and again, we played a little phone tag today, but I'm glad the messages, and thank God for text and things along those lines that we were able to catch up with one another. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. And Tammy, I don't know how much you've heard of the conversation. Are you outside right now?
Yes.
You are. Okay, we were hearing some background. So is that just the air? I guess the outside noise?
Yeah, the outside.
Okay, we're going to try to do it. I don't know if you can get somewhere to a closed area, if that helps, maybe into a room. You're down there in Florida, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we're going to try to work with us. If we have it where it gets really, we'll just bring it to your attention. Is that okay?
Okay, that's no problem.
Okay, Tammy, you were talking about the racist problem, the racial issues facing this country. You and I had shared about some issues down there in Florida. We talk about, as Cliff alluded to, that racism and racial disparities now has crept into courtrooms and police departments. And you were sharing with me this week some things in regards to what you are dealing with down there in Florida and some other things that you're fighting for justice. I'm going to give you the floor and let you tell the folks about it, okay?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Here in Florida, we have a young man that was actually running from the bail bondsman, so they say, and he ended up supposedly jumping to his own death. His name was George Alexander. He was a 21-year-old young boy, which the family does not believe that he jumped to his own death. We believe that he was pushed over a bridge, which was only a good maybe 5 feet, and the water was only 4 feet of water. And they're trying to say he drowned in 4 feet of water, and he's a 6 foot, 21-year-old, healthy young man. Basically, they ruled his death out as accidental, which we know it's not accidental. He was being chased by the Florida Highway Patrol. Then a bail bondsman came in and chased behind him on foot. And 2 days later, he was found in the canal. So in the autopsy, the coroner's office took his body, would not let his family see the body for at least 2 weeks, stating that it wasn't in good shape for them to see or even identify who he was. So at that time, the family believes that they did some things that they weren't supposed to do, and they try to hide things.
Oh, my goodness. So this man, let me make sure I heard you correctly. They said he drowned in 4 feet of water?
Yes. It's actually 4 feet of water. We all went out there and measured it. It was actually only 4 feet. And the bridge is not very high to jump off of, actually. There's a seven-year-old can jump off. It's just like jumping in from a diving board into a pool.
Sure.
That's how high it is. Okay. And they claim that he died in 4 feet of water, which we don't believe that. The family doesn't believe that. I went as far as calling the ACLU. I went to the newspapers, the Post that we have here in Florida. I went to the news. I actually got one of the news staff to go to the family's home and do an interview.
Okay.
I've tried to contact everybody that I possibly can to help with this case, but it just went nowhere. It went nowhere.
We didn't hold no
rallies like the Corey Jones, because it's the same incident as the Corey Jones case here in Florida. I tried to do everything that I could.
No, I believe you. And Tammy, have you reached out to members of Congress for Florida that are in Washington, D.C. to address this issue?
No, I can only go on so far. I try to get the sister involved, because the mother was too, she couldn't do anything, because that's not the first son she lost. She lost a son 3 years ago to a murder that, someone killed him as well. So this is a second son within a 3 to 4 year that got killed. So she wasn't ready to
deal with that.
To deal with that. So the sister was trying to deal with all that herself, which I had her in contact with a lot of people, but it just seemed it went nowhere. I don't know, maybe because there wasn't money issues. I don't know. I mean, I tried to be heard. It even hit the newspapers. But did they do anything? No. Why? Because his race, and they think, he had a past history of drug charges and stuff like that. So they looked at him as he was nothing.
So he's the nobody of society, so we can run him down and kill him and say he drowned in 4 feet of water. Let me tell you something. I don't have to go to Harvard to recognize a 6'4" gentleman is not going to drown in 4 feet of water.
Impossible.
It just doesn't happen. And I'm going to tell you, Tammy, right now, and let me ask you a question. As you see and observe these things, it has to become frustrating that, and it's a clear picture that we're talking about on this show tonight, black lives in society's eyes do not matter because they continue this pattern of killing black men. How do we, how do we change that? And that's just one case that you're dealing with. You've probably seen a number of issues. And again, he was the wrong color, so who cares if he died?
Right.
That's unacceptable. What motivates you to wake up in the morning and keep fighting against this racism in this country?
Well, I mean, my brother, my brother was a victim, to he didn't get killed, but he was accused of things that he did not commit as well as a younger adult and prison for it. But now he is out. So, but every day I just can't believe how these young boys are getting thrown in jail or getting chased by the police, and they're getting chased into their death, because basically that's what they did to George. They chased him to his death, and they're not getting, nothing's happening. They're not getting fired. They're not getting, I just don't understand. And I wake up every day not understanding how these things can happen. And I don't know. I just,
sure.
It just amazes me. And just like the young man that I'm fighting for in Florida now, he's Hispanic, but he was accused of a homicide that he didn't commit as well. And I've been fighting for him for almost 2 years now. So, he was only 16 at the time of that crime.
16.
And 16 years old on that crime. And he was Hispanic, but, his where he lived at, they didn't like him because of his family's past history, not his mother. So they basically, had a problem with him, and decided that they're okay. This guy said that he's the one that shot this person. We're just going to go ahead and arrest him off of information and charge him with murder. There was never physical evidence. There was nothing, just information.
And he was convicted?
He was convicted of second-degree murder.
And how much time?
And he's doing 35 years with 25 mandatory.
Wow. I'll tell you what.
It's sad. Florida has no zero tolerance. They don't give you no chances. Instead of rehabilitating, they're incarcerating. It's very sad, especially with the young people.
No, I agree with that. And we deal with the issue of the gentleman, and I'll have research team look him up. The gentleman that was killed in a Florida county jail. Lisa, you remember that story where he was cooked.
Yes.
Basically made lunch or an entree, boiled in a shower to his skin, separated from his body. And he was in jail for a very minimal amount of cocaine. I believe we talked to his brother that said he was never into drugs. They killed him and locked him in the shower. What the heck is going on down there in Florida?
And Florida is terrible. There is a death every day here in the Florida prisons. Every day, an inmate just died a couple weeks ago from Wakulla Correctional Institution. Of course, another black male. Mostly what you're seeing dying in our Florida prisons is the black males. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on, but I know of that case of where this man got burnt in the shower, and basically his skin was falling off. That's how hot it was.
Yeah, and
he's not. That was in Miami-Dade Correctional. Yes, I know about that story.
That's unbelievable.
It is.
That.
And do you guys? I mean, down there is I mean, the sheriff gets voted in. So, I mean, the communities have got to come to some conclusion that, hey, we got to vote the wrong sheriff out and the wrong sheriff here. And I mean, you as a community, have to make your voice heard all the way up to the governor of the state, all the way up to the...
Oh, well, this governor of this state don't give, excuse me, a damn about inmates. He can care less what happens to inmates in the state of Florida. Governor Rick Scott, he doesn't care. He can care less if they live or die. I mean, he claims he's brought Julie Jones in to try to clean up the prisons, but nothing has been done. Nothing.
And
there's still inmates dying on a daily basis.
That's unbelievable. And we have the nerve to act like, oh, we're beyond that. We're past that. The gentleman's name is Darren Rainey. He's the gentleman that was killed in the shower. And it says after 3 years, officials finally rule black mentally ill inmate Darren Rainey's torturous death in Miami prison an accident as of January 7th. How is that an accident?
How is it an accident when you turned up the water to 180 degrees and boiled him alive? Mm-hmm. An accident on whose part? He didn't take part in his accidental death. Therefore, it's the responsibility of the facility that he was at. This is not an accident. You boil a man alive and then have another man clean up his body parts. That's not an accident. That is murder.
That's murder. And Tammy, I'll tell you right now that we're going to do everything that we can at AJC Radio to get the word out about this gentleman. I think you forwarded me that information already. We're going to dig into that. We're going to post contact information. Have you started a petition on change.org to seek justice for these men?
Well, on Change, I have for Stephen Castaneto, the one that's doing the 35-year bid right now, I have for him, his sister, for George Alexander, his sister was to start a petition for him. I don't know how far it went. I only could go as far as I could due to the fact that I'm not a family member, so I couldn't really talk and do a lot of things that I really wanted to do. So I forwarded the information to the sister, and I don't know how as far as she went. But I personally try to get the word out there myself, which I did. It went to the media, of course, but that's as far as it went.
Well, Tammy, this is what I'd like to do going forward. We would like to set up a show. I'd like you to get a hold of the family members, and we will do a show in regards to the injustice that these men have endured. And I definitely want to deal with the fact that the man and the mother, have her come on and tell her story, losing two children, and then the absurd explanation that a 6'4 gentleman died and drowned to death in 4 feet of water. We want to bring a show and make our listeners aware of what's going on, and we will post something on our website to contact information. You can forward that to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we will push for justice for these men. It's not about what happened before. What can we do now? As America continues to look away from these type of tragedies. And I was looking at the Darren Rainey, as you're talking about Florida and the things that go on there. Says after allegedly in his cell, after Rainey was in his cell, he was locked into a tight shower and blasted for nearly 2 hours with water that was over 108 scalding hot degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And he was begging for his life, screaming apologies and remorse so loud that other inmates could hear him. The officers kept the water so hot and forceful that the steam began to melt off Darren Rainey's skin. And you're going to tell me on January 27th, an investigation yielded this was an accident. Every person in the investigation should be fired, should be brought up on murder charges.
That's what I said when I seen the article. I don't know if you've seen another article here in Florida that, you know, of the three white men that were correctional officers that were planning to kill a black inmate. He was getting ready to be released from prison, actually. And so another guard overheard them speaking and said that they were going to kill him before he was released. So they actually put him in, they put the black inmate into protective custody. Mm-hmm. And the three white men actually got charged, and come to find out, after they did backgrounds on them, they were involved in the KKK.
Wow. What?
And that's here in Florida. This is what's going on in our prisons in Florida. The women are getting raped. The men are getting killed. This is what's going on here. And Governor Rick Scott is just sitting down doing absolutely nothing. He's allowing the guards to kill innocent people just because they're in jail. They don't deserve
Exactly right. And Tammy, we are going to reach out to that governor's office as an advocacy group. We're going to seek for justice. This is unbelievable. Lisa, when you hear this, and Tammy, I salute your efforts for what you're doing down there. I appreciate you reaching back out to us to bring this thing. And we're playing fall tag a little bit, but I tell you what, we're engaged now. And we are going to get involved with this and anything that we can do. This is horrific. So I want you to give the families my phone number. You have it. Give it to them. We can do a conference call, whatever, and we're going to talk to these families. We will set a show dedicated for them to share their story. This is unbelievable. And I'll tell you what, this is Black History Month we're dealing with, but minorities as a whole in this country are targets. Hispanic people targets. Asian people are targets. If you're anything but white America, we have a problem. And we got to deal with that. So, Tammy, how can folks get a hold of you? I'm going to be respectful. Do you have much? Can you come back with us on the other side of this break? Or are you in a rush to move on?
Oh, no. I can come back.
All right, Tammy, we're going to bring you right back. Right now, we're getting ready to go to break. On the other side of this break, Tammy, we will come back and continue to talk to you. Ladies and gentlemen of America, make no mistake about this. The frowns in this studio right now on the faces of our people here, it's self-evident of the disgust that every American citizen should be outraged. Something has to happen. Tammy is down there trying to make a difference. She's lined up with an ally tonight of No Nonsense with AJC Radio and a Just Cause as we seek the message to bring the message of justice all around the world. Tammy, we're coming right back. Folks, stay with us. If you want to join in the conversation, feel free to call at 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. As the discussion continues on the racial disgust and disease that is plaguing the nation, we're coming right back. Ladies and gentlemen of Southern Colorado, did you know that PBR, Professional Bull Riders, is headquartered right here in Colorado? PBR is an international professional bull riding organization based in Pueblo, Colorado. In 1992, when 20 bull riders from the rodeo circuit came together to give life to a dream that they all shared, they never imagined it would be so quickly developed into what has officially been declared the fastest growing sport in America. The PBR, the riders pooled their resources, $1,000 apiece, and broke away from the confines of the rodeo format to make bull riding the most popular of the seven events in traditional rodeo, a standalone sport, and take it to major markets across the United States. Today, the visionary founders are riding a wave of popularity as the PBR continues its charge as one of the fastest growing properties in the history of sports. The concept is simple. Match the world's best bull riding athletes against the toughest animal athletes on the planet in an 8-second man versus beast duel. More than 1,200 cowboys from the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Brazil, Australia, and New Zealand hold PBR memberships. How would you like to work for this great company? We are hiring right now. We are currently looking for an associate attorney, public relations manager, social media manager, and digital project manager, to name just a few. Folks, check out our website to view more of our open positions at www.pbr.com. And you can also send an email to recruiting@pbr.com or make a phone call, if that's better, at 719-242-2800. Folks, bull riding is taking off, and it all starts with PBR. Oh.
I want to go to what President Obama said around the arrest of Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates, arrested again at his home by a white police officer. I mean, Gates had lived there for years. He had just come home from a trip, responding to a report of a possible burglary. The incident sparked a debate about race relations. President Obama was asked about it during his fourth primetime White House news conference.
Now, I don't know, not having been there and not seeing all the facts, what role race played in that. But I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry. Number two, that the Cambridge police acted stupidly in arresting somebody when there was already proof that they were in their own home. And number three, what I think we know separate and apart from this incident, is that there is a long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately. And that's just a fact. As you know, Lynn, when I was in the state legislature in Illinois, we worked on a racial profiling bill because there was indisputable evidence that blacks and Hispanics were being stopped disproportionately. And that is a sign, an example of how, you know, race remains a factor in the society. That doesn't lessen the incredible progress that has been made. I am standing here as testimony to the progress that's been made. And yet, the fact of the matter is that, you know, this still haunts us.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen of America. The president is clear. He said these racial issues are in our face. People continue to die. And we're trying to get Tammy back. We lost a connection there, so we're trying to get her back on. Lisa, when you listen to her tell the story, she says she reached out to the governor's office. What in the world is the problem? Is it just something people refuse to deal with? If I tell myself long enough, I'm sorry, Lisa, if we tell ourselves long enough, it's not an issue, that's not going to disappear.
No, it's not.
Your thoughts on that?
I think it's that people, no, I don't know if it's necessarily they don't want to deal with it. I think that a lot of people really don't care.
That's even worse.
I know, but I really believe that it boils down to people just not caring about what's happening. They put it out of their minds. It's not something that concerns them. It's not happening to them, so they don't pay any attention to it. They just don't care about it. If it was affecting them on a daily basis, they might feel differently. But this is something that's not affecting them personally, and they just don't care.
No, and I agree with you, Lisa, on that. But this is an epidemic. I mean, we are going backwards. We're not going forward.
Absolutely.
And the president made it clear. He said, because I'm standing here, people tend to think we've arrived. We've not arrived. More African Americans in the last couple of years, unexplainable deaths, the deaths that Tammy is talking about down there in Florida. The man pleaded for his life, as I read the story on the gentleman in Florida. He was begging them, please stop. He's apologizing for something that he didn't even do wrong. And they continue to torture him. How do you rule that an accident?
It's sickening, and that is why that President Obama in that last clip that was played, that he says the racial plague still haunts us as Americans. That this is not a few little incidences here and there. It is a plague of racism going on in the country, and it has to be dealt with. And like Lisa said, there's a lot of people who don't care because it has not come onto their doorstep. It has not showed up on their front lawn with a burning cross or a Klans member in a white hood. So then most of America says, okay, well, it's not an issue, but it is an issue because you look at the fact that, sure, lynchings have calmed down, but now you see people with badges, law enforcement is taking it upon themselves to conduct the killing of African American, black men, whatever you want to call us. And then you look at the prison system. that you see the minority inmates far outweigh white inmates. And then you look at the court system, you look at prosecutors, you look at law enforcement, you look at the whole socioeconomic structure of America is geared against the minority. And you have to say, what is going on? I mean, other countries have to look at us and say, you know, what is going on in America? And how is it that this is a country that's been around for going on 250 years, but you still have race relation issues?
It's unbelievable. And going back to the article we read with Harry Ziad, he writes this, and he makes the statement, the truth is white America's silence around racism is no longer working. Organizations like Black Lives Matter and the Movement for Black Lives refuse to let it, shining light on all of the issues it would prefer to ignore. In its place, a resistance to that challenge to pay attention gains traction. It is reminiscent of a blatantly racist political response to Reconstruction after the Civil War, but it is only more of the same. Non-white communities have felt and challenged racism throughout, while many well-meaning white people only concern has been to cover it as much as possible, because the only other alternative would be the much more difficult task of destroying it. Think of that. Rather than get involved and destroy it, we ignore it. We tuck it away. We want to cover it up because that's not nice for my social status. It's not nice for the little parties I may go to where an African-American may come up who is mentioned, who was killed in the streets. Ladies and gentlemen of America, make no mistake about it. This is a problem. And the casualties that we talk about is very clear. 23-year-old Marcion McCarroll II, a young Ohio activist involved with Black Lives Matter movement, committed suicide on the steps of the State House in Columbus, Ohio. He killed himself as a result of this. And this is, when you hear that, are there not casualties? Are there not collateral damage? As those that even fight racism, their lives become lost. And we want to ignore it? You ignore it, it's going to visit your front step. William, your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm just sitting here listening to this show, and I was sitting here, I was just thinking about the fact that our own government has paraded racism around so much. I was just sitting here thinking that South Carolina has lived with the Confederate flag over its state house for years, up until 2015. Up to 2015, when a man decides to go into an African-American church in Charleston, I believe he gunned down 9 people.
Yep.
9 people he gunned down. Then they finally decide that this racist symbol needs to come down as a state flag. Now, we are the United States, but how in the world can we be united if one state, its whole banner and existence is a Confederate flag? The whole representation of racism hangs from its state capital. I'm sitting here just listening to that. That's how proud the racists have become.
Well, the statement that he made is that it's no longer whispered. It's shouted on housetops, on rooftops. People blatantly come in and they actively scream, I'm a racist.
Right. Well, even as the show is going on, it's in so many areas of our own government. I was sitting here looking at this judge, Judge Siebel, who was a judge in Montana. He was a judge of the United States District Court of District of Montana. He was the one that was cited for all the racist, sexist, and politically inflammatory emails that he sent over 4 years about our president. This is a judge that is ruling over people. He is sentencing people, but yet he has basically been sending out racist emails for 4 years. So I'm sitting there saying, how is this? How is this? And he gets off scot-free. He gets off scot-free. He is able to retire and no one says anything, because he was, basically he retires amidst the investigation of his misconduct. But he sits at home and he got away. And some of those emails were about our own president. Racist emails by a judge in Montana. So, you know, it's at every level here. And it is a disease. It is truly an infectious disease. It is gone in so many areas, it's untold. So, those are my thoughts.
No, and these are things that definitely need to be dealt with. And we will continue to address these issues, and they're very troubling. Ladies and gentlemen of America, if you want to call in and be a part of this program tonight, feel free to call 347-838-8976. And we have got we're able to bring Tammy back. Tammy, you with us? Tammy, are you with us? Okay, so we're still trying to bring her back on.
Yeah, I think she might be in a bad area.
Okay, Tammy, if you can hear us, we're trying to bring you back on. Bear with us. Folks, again, if you want to call in to be part of this program, 347-838-8976. And call in, that's 347-838-8976
to add
your comments on it. And folks, this is something that needs to be addressed. We have to have the conversation, and we have to talk about it. So I'll tell you what, we will continue to visit not only what the president has said, and he is very, very clear on what he is saying, but the Congressional Black Caucus in Washington, D.C., Lisa, we had an opportunity to meet with Congressman Butterfield. They are very involved.
They are very involved,
in addressing these issues, and we're getting ready to give an opportunity to hear from them. And I think it's important that America knows this is a concern to everybody. This is not something that's just this little small group over here. When you think about the young man that took his life, a very vocal person of Black Lives That Matter, killed himself to send a message. And he made the statement, well, I got you, I get the last laugh. But your life is gone as a result of what has happened. And so we are looking to that fact to deal with those issues. And let's hear what the Congressional Black Caucus, as they speak on the importance of race relations.
Race, because one of the things that we need to distinguish today is race versus racism. Now, let me say up front, racism is on the increase in the United States, and that's a very sad and unfortunate fact. The Associated Press did a study with a leading psychologist in 2012 that found that the increase in negative attitudes towards blacks as negative has increased from 48% when President Obama was elected to office to 51% in 2012. That is an increase in overt stereotyping, negative stereotyping of black people. Unfortunately, we don't have measures for Latinos, for Native Americans. I would suspect that we would actually see similar patterns, particularly when we think about the conversations we've had around immigration. Nonetheless, the point here is that that same study went deeper and looked at something that I would say is race that we need to distinguish, and that is implicit bias. We have two decades of social science that actually show us that our laws and policies have not kept pace with our understanding of the human brain. So here is your brain on race. Your brain on race is that 56% of Americans actually have, in that same AP study, 56% have negative attitudes towards black people that they do not know they have necessarily, right? Now that's something that's very different. So when we hear a juror in the George Zimmerman case say, this isn't about race, there's something that's actually not surprising in the cognitive science about that. Because quite frankly, most people in this country do not believe that racism is okay. And when they hear racist statements, they think that's wrong and something should be done about it, and are completely unconscious as to the ways in which our images, our constant images of young black men being arrested, or our constant images of Latinos being handcuffed at the border.
And there you have it, folks. AJC Radio, dealing with issues in regards to racism in America. And we're going to see, I believe we've been trying to get Tammy. I think she's having some issues with her phone. Tammy, if you can hear us, we're doing our very best to bring you back on, so bear with us. as we try to see it. I believe there's some issues in the area that you may be, and we'll address that issue. When you hear that, what the Congressional Black Caucus is looking to do, everybody's talking very blatant about the issues that we face. What are your thoughts as you see leaders now saying something has to be done?
Well, I think they're seeing it now because they have to see it. I mean, this is not something new. They're seeing it now because they have to see it. But now they realize they have to deal with it. We have an African-American president. Some of this stuff has been offensive to him, no doubt. So they're having to come to the table and say, listen, we have to deal with the racism that's on the table. We have to deal with the fact that this cannot just sit here and we sit idly by and do nothing about it. So the bottom line is, like you said, this is addressing people of all colors. This is not just African-American.
Well, it affects everybody.
Everybody. Everybody.
When there is racism going on in America, these are issues that we have to address. And Cliff, I believe we have a caller that has a comment.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. Yes, we do have a caller who wants to have a couple comments about what we're talking about tonight. And we have Larry from Atlanta, I believe, is where Larry is from. And you have a comment or a question you wanted to talk to us about on this subject. Go ahead, Larry, you're live.
Thank you for taking my call, sir. But I've been listening for about 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to say that the things you cite as indicators of prima facie and overweening instances of racism that are parallel, I would imagine, are keeping black people from achieving or moving forward in society, I don't see them as being very significant at all. The fact that a Black Lives activist shot himself to death on the Ohio State Courthouse, and he cited in his Facebook that my demons have got, not the racist demons, but my demons have got the best of me, doesn't indicate to me that this is something that was caused by overt American racism. The fact that there are a disproportionate amount of black people in prisons, and I do agree with you that it's true. No doubt there is, but we also know for a fact, indisputable fact, that for instance, I'm not saying this is the whole reason for it, we know that blacks commit a disproportionate amount of homicides. So if there were a disproportionate amount of blacks in prison for homicide, would that be so surprising? The fact that victims who are the victims of armed robbery and report those victimizations to the police cite a black offender, whether they're black victims or white victims or whatever, 65% of them say a black robbed them. I mean, would it be surprising to see a disproportionate amount of blacks in prison for armed robbery? And so on with many other crimes.
Let us respond to that.
But first, I got a question for you.
And my question is, when you look at a man being boiled alive in a jailhouse shower, 180 degrees, boiled till his skin comes off, when you look at the fact that cops are shooting black kids, an unarmed black child, 12 years old, no indictment, chokes a man to death on video, for the world to see, no indictment, kills another kid running away from him, holding a knife, shoots him 17 times, no indictment. How do you chalk that up to anything else besides there's racism going on? I'll let you talk for 5 minutes. Hold on, Larry. Give me a second.
I didn't talk for 5 minutes. I know that.
Well, okay, for however long you talk, hold on. Let me finish with the question I'm asking. How do you chalk this up as anything but racism? And you say, okay, well, the disproportionate amount of crime is committed by black people. How is it that you take crack cocaine and you take powder cocaine, but you say one is more prevalent in the black community, so you're going to charge 10 times more sentencing for that drug than the drug that's prevalent in the white community? How do you call that anything but racism? Answer those questions for me, Larry. Tell me what the answer to
that. Okay, sir. I'd be happy to. I'll be happy to. First of all, you were factually incorrect. I believe you were referring to the Laquan McDonald shooting in Chicago by the Chicago police officer. He was indicted. He is awaiting trial right now. So the fact that you said there was no indictment is simply factually inaccurate. He was indicted by a grand jury. Number two, the Tamir Rice shooting was also investigated by a grand jury. There's been extensive findings by the grand jury, and they said that under Cleveland law and under police procedure of the use of force continuum, the police officers were sadly justified in their shooting of him. You don't agree with it, but that was a finding by the grand jury. Now,
the grand jury never voted on that. They never voted.
They did, madam. That's not true. They did vote on it.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Larry, and I'll tell you this. This is carrots to peas, if you will. The bottom line is the majority of the United States of America is aware of the racial issues in this country. Now,
well, yes. You didn't mention the ones that I think are really important.
Well,
you didn't mention them at all.
Let me tell you this real quick. The issues that we address on this program are critical. You have a 6'4 man saying he drowned in a pool. You have Walter Scott getting out of a car, being shot in the back. You have Michael Brown, unarmed, being killed by a police officer. Let me explain this to you, though. At the end of the day, we have an issue in this country. We can go back and forth and debate, well, this is an issue, over-incarceration of black and minorities. We can speak to all of that. But we're speaking about the issues that have shaped the foundation of this country in a very big way, in a significant way, especially when you have Eric Garner in New York City being murdered by police officers.
That's not true, sir. It's not true.
Well, that's your opinion.
It's not true what you said about Michael Brown either. You seem to forget that Barack Obama, the very man you cite as speaking to these racial issues, Barack Obama, his Justice Department conducted an investigation on Officer Wilson's action, and it's the report they made sounded as if it could have been written by his defense attorney.
Let me explain this to you really
quick. Department of Justice, did you read what they wrote?
Here's what we're going to do. And I appreciate your call tonight, Larry. We appreciate you calling. But I will tell you this, folks. It is very clear. One thing is certain. It doesn't matter if the Department of Justice did an investigation. It doesn't matter if the police department did an internal investigation. An investigation was just done with Darren, who was killed in Florida.
Boiled
to death. And their response was it was accidental. So we give no credence to a so-called investigation.
And the investigations amount to nothing.
And the bottom line, we put Eric Holder on blast, too, for the lack of action by the Department of Justice. The bottom line is, that's really kind of frustrating, because the bottom line is, you saw these cases. Eric Garner's case was a case that was just out there in plain view for everybody to see. He's a black man being choked by white officers. If it was a white man being choked by black officers, would the outcome have been the same? No! We know the outcome would not have been the same. The bottom line is, if there was a black officer that would have choked a white man, they would be sitting in jail now.
Well, there you go. And I believe, Cliff, we have Tammy back.
Yes, Tammy, we have your line live. Can you hear us?
Tammy, are you with us? Okay, there's apparently a problem. Tammy, we thank you for joining us tonight. We are having an issue bringing you on. I don't know what happened to bring you back. We've been trying with a lot of effort to bring you back. We appreciate you. I will call you offline tonight if you can't hear me. But I'll tell you right now, these are important issues. You can call in and raise your voice and think you have a story. Investigations fail all the time.
And you know, Lamont, this is what the problem is. Is that we can look at the fact we have video footage of a man being choked to death by NYPD. We have video footage of a 12-year-old boy in Tamir Rice being shot by a police officer within 3 seconds of him jumping out of a car with an unarmed child. We have video footage of a person running away from a police officer and getting shot several times. And the issue is that you have people that are of the opinion, let's say, that
There is nothing wrong with that picture. That is where the problem is. If Larry, if you can say that you don't have a problem with what you see in these acts, with you seeing a boy, a 12-year-old boy being shot to death by the police, if you say that that is not a problem,
no, he thinks that's justice.
Then well, you have a problem.
Oh, he's got a problem.
That is where the problem lies, is in acts like that, and the people in the community who give the police justifications and say, I don't see any problem with you shooting a 12-year-old boy. I don't see you. I don't see any problem with you shooting a man in the back, as long as he is a black man.
This is called deflection, and if we can deflect on that issue, the American people will attempt to do that. And it's not all the American people. So what you have here, if you want to justify a fact that an investigation was done and it was found according to law, well, laws are bad. The grand jury is a joke. So when you cite the grand jury that they found this or found that, it is one-sided. Number one, on any grand jury, the defense cannot be in the room. It is strictly the position of the state or the prosecutor. We've talked about that. Congressman Hank Johnson looking into changing the grand jury process, making it fair. So if you want to come on this program, we welcome your opinion. But make no mistake about it, we will speak to that issue. We will address that issue until we have the tough conversation. Nothing is going to change. You run up against a monster at AJC Radio. We will deal with the issues. We will ask the tough questions. We will ask you to be accountable for your comments. You better come and do your homework. When you come on AJC Radio, we intend to deal with those issues as it is deemed necessary, and we will continue to do that. Go ahead, William.
No, I was just sitting there thinking, all the cases that we've talked about tonight, the caller, you know, his comments, the thing that really bothers me is that, go back to what you said, Lamont, racism impacts everybody. So if you look at every one of the cases we talked about, every one of the situations we talked about, and you do a race reversal, if you look at Michael Brown being white and Darren Wilson being black, if you look at Trayvon Martin being white and George Zimmerman being black, if you could honestly look at those situations and you don't think the outcome would be different, if you don't think the outcome of those, of the grand jury, of the investigation, of the indictments, of all those things would have been different, you are greatly deceived.
Well, without question, and I'll tell you right now, folks, it may be wintertime here in Colorado today. We said the temperature was 38 degrees, cloudy with some sun, but I think we've reached over 100 degrees Fahrenheit here at AJC Radio as we continue to address the issues of injustice that face and plague a nation. And I'll tell you right now, folks, this conversation will continue. And we appreciate Tammy Donnelly joining us tonight for this segment of the program. Had some communication issues getting through. We appreciate you. We will definitely post your information on our website. Ladies and gentlemen, go to AJCRadio.com, and you can actually, hopefully, we'll have that posted here later this evening to get in contact with Tammy as we continue to fight for justice for people who are suffering at the hands of a corrupt system. But right now, we change gears. We ask you to strap in, and we ask you to lean back, because right now we go to a segment, What You Didn't Know About the RP6. Some people think that business is a game. And what we have learned is that business actually is war.
When they wanted people to sign non-disclosure agreements and all that kind of stuff, sometimes they didn't want to do it.
It's strange to me. I think it's still strange. It just absolutely makes no sense. Is this really real? Is this happening?
And then all of a sudden your whole life is ripped apart.
What we have learned is that the RP6 story was supposed to be the American dream is an American nightmare.
They were floored that they were even being raided.
It became very clear that the court-appointed attorneys were not working for the guys. And it seemed like in many cases that they were collaborating or working with the prosecution.
We constantly hear in the news, every week you're going to hear about another person wrongfully convicted. And this is a unique case in the sense that you have six businessmen that have been wrongfully convicted. You would think the media would jump all over it.
Justice is not fair anymore. They say justice is supposed to be blind. It's not blind. It's not blind. They pick and choose who they want to convict and who they want to send to jail.
Is this happening in America? The American dream of the RP6 has turned into a nightmare. Crying children left behind as a result of a corrupt system and corruption. We will seek and search for justice. We will ask the tough questions. We will demand answers as justice lays idle in the streets of America. We look for the answer. Ladies and gentlemen, go out to change.org, sign the petition now. America's future depends on it. Ladies and gentlemen of America, right now we deal with an issue of the RP6. The RP6 were wrongfully convicted here in the state of Colorado for crimes that they never committed. Who are the RP6? We'll say it again. David Banks, Gary Walker, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, and Demetrius Harper. Tonight we address an issue of what you didn't know about the RP6. And the big question that's asked among a line of people, why did the RP6 go pro se? What was the motivating factor in them going pro se? They say you're an idiot, we've heard. Why would you challenge the government without formal counsel? The true answer to that question is because the counsel appointed by the court was incompetent. They failed to talk to the RP6 in regards to evidence, to discovery, and refused to talk to them about strategy in regards to their defense. They refused to take and honor the oath that they took to defend the Constitution and to defend these defendants against this wrongful and malicious prosecution. When you think about that, pro se, it was critical. People point fingers. They say, why would they do such a thing? Because they were fighting for their lives. Williams, your thoughts on pro se. What was the urgency of that?
Well, bottom line is, you pointed it out, if you don't have people that's going to represent you, that's going to listen to your strategy, listen to your case, I mean, you have to do that. If the court-appointed attorneys are not going to put forth an effort to take a stand and listen to you, defend your case, then what's the point? What's the point of you standing here smiling in my face and you're not here to defend me? You're not here to understand this case and what I'm going through? And so, I commend the guys. I commend the guys for doing that. And so it's a very big step. It's a bold step, but it was something that was needed. Like you said, it was something that they had to do, fighting for their lives. If no one is going to listen to you, if no one is going to step up and to your defense, then you're going to have to defend yourself.
Oh, without question. And I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, the founders made it clear that you had the right to defend yourself. There was a reason that was put in as an option for a defendant, because there had to be some type of indication that fairness may not be on the side of defendants and they would need to take that action. Cliff?
And you also have to look at the fact that when the IRP6 compiled a proffer, saying this is the business that we did, this is how we conducted, this is everything that we did that shows that we abided by all the guidelines that staffing industries and companies abide by every day. They created that proffer, wanted to present that to the U.S. Attorney John Walsh, said we would like to have a meeting that we will come before you and show you everything that we did as a business. And if there's something in here that is incorrect, then you can bring us up on charges of perjury, on charges of whatever. The attorneys that were appointed to the IRP6 said they would not go into John Walsh, the U.S. attorney, with the IRP6. That was the only way he would sit down with them. The attorneys together collectively said, we will not go with you
in front of the U.S. attorney. How do you then think that this person has your best interests at heart? When you say, I have the truth, I want to present it to the person who can make the decision whether the things against me will be dropped or held, and you will not even give us the courtesy to go in with us to present the proffer. That is why the IRP6 said these attorneys are not for us. We'd be better off going up against the government on them.
And I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, the IRP6 did an outstanding job, but was cut. Their legs were cut off to present a defense. The defense presented by the IRP6 was clear. It was perfectly clear that their arguments were relevant. But we had federal judge Christine Arguello and AUSA Matthew Kirsch, who refused, who worked together to ensure a conviction because they set the mandate. They set the tone of the trial, thus forcing these men to go pro se. That's unacceptable because every defendant has a right to counsel, to a clear and good defense, to take the position, to defend their positions as they saw fit. Their attorneys failed to honor that oath. They failed to do it, thus they were fired. And they took the right to defend themselves, and they were cut down at every level. Perpetrators of justice, those that don't care, those that don't matter. Lisa, who are they? This is what you didn't know about the IRP6. We continue next time on this issue. Lisa, who are the perpetrators of justice?
They are U.S. Attorney John Walsh, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, Assistant U.S. Attorney Sunita Hazra, Attorney Greg Goldberg, Federal Judge Christine Arguello, Appellate Judge Jerome Holmes, Appellate Judge Bobby Baldock, Appellate Judge Harris Hart, Federal Judge R. Brooke Jackson, Magistrate Judge Craig Schaefer, Court Reporter Darlene Martinez, FBI Agent John Smith, FBI Agent Robert Mullen, Former Federal Agent John Epke, Former Federal Agent Gary Hilberry, Attorney Thomas Goodreads, Attorney Clifford Barnard, Attorney Thomas Richard, Attorney Robert Berger, Attorney Mitchell Baker, Attorney Boston Staten Jr., Attorney Rick Kornfeld, Attorney Mark Garagos, Susan Holland of ETI Professional Services, and Samuel K. Thurman.
Well, there you have it, folks. If you're wondering what the most wanted list is, they are the perpetrators of justice who have sent six innocent men to prison, known as the IRP6. David Banks, Gary Walker, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper. These are fathers. These are husbands that seek justice. Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake about it. We want to take a moment to understand and have you understand racism is alive and well in America. To hear this show, go to AJCRadio.com, click on the archives, and you can hear this show. Pass it on to your friends, folks. We've dealt in some issues tonight that are huge that must be addressed. Please feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and also, again, go to AJCRadio.com. You can hear all of these programs. And, folks, we continue to bring the message of justice around the world. We ask that you remember Renee Lima Marin, fighting for justice. Go to change.org, sign his petition. Go to change.org and sign the IRP6 petition as we ask President Obama to grant clemency along with H. Lee Sarrigan's recommendation that these men be released because they have been done a huge miscarriage of justice. Cliff?
Yes, I want to say thank you to our guests, Bim Osefis and Tammy Donnelly. Thank you for taking time out of your evening to join with us tonight. Also, I want to say thank you to all of our callers, everyone in the chat room. We appreciate everyone's perspective when you call in to tune in to AJC Radio. Also, want to say thank you to our production team, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson, with K&D Productions, helping out Ill Skillers Girl in the Control Room, making sure you hear what it is that we have to say. Also, to our production support team, they give us accurate and up-to-date information so we can pass that on to you. And to the truth, we know you're out there, and we appreciate it.
And ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake about this one. On Thursday, we will be honoring a champion on Capitol Hill. You don't want to miss this program, folks. We take a moment, and we will be honoring Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee.
Oh, yes.
And I'll tell you, we had an opportunity to sit down with her a year ago in Washington, and I'll tell you, that's a tough lady that makes that doesn't make any mistake of the strength, the leadership of who she is over the top. Lisa, you were there.
Oh,
your
yes.
thoughts on this upcoming show as we honor her.
Oh, my God, that's going to be awesome. She is such a powerhouse and such an awesome, awesome lady.
That is going to be probably one of the best shows we've ever aired. You know how I feel about powerful, strong women.
Well, there you go, folks. Don't miss it. AJC Radio Spotlight on Capitol Hill kicks off Thursday as we honor Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, William Williams, and the entire AJC Radio team. Good night, America, as we search to bring the message of justice all around the world. Good night, America.
Good night.
Good night.
I still have a dream.
Yes.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day,
yes,
this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
Yes.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I say to you today, my friend, let freedom ring. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Indeed, it is a time for wisdom. For yet again, the family of a young black man is grieving a life cut short. Yet again, the streets of an American city are marred by violence, by shattered glass and shouts of anger and shows of force. Yet again, a community is reeling, its fault lines laid bare, and its bonds of trust and respect frayed. Yet again, brave police officers have been attacked in the line of duty. What we have seen in Baltimore should, indeed, I think does, tear at our soul. From Ferguson to Staten Island to Baltimore, the patterns have become unmistakable and undeniable. Walter Scott, shot in the back in Charleston, South Carolina, unarmed, in debt, terrified of spending more time in jail for child support payments he couldn't afford. Tamir Rice, shot in a park in Cleveland, Ohio, unarmed and just 12 years old. Eric Garner, choked to death after being stopped for selling cigarettes on the streets of our city. And now, Freddie Gray, his spine nearly severed while in police custody. Not only as a mother and a grandmother, but as a citizen, a human being, my heart breaks for these young men and their families. We have to come to terms with some hard truths about race and justice in America.